thing that I thought today would talk about Malcolm X. An editorial in the now defunct Saturday Evening Post said this: if Malcolm X were not a Negro, his autobiography would be little more than a journal of abnormal psychology, the story of a burglar, dope pusher, addict, and jailbird with a family history of insanity, who acquires messianic delusions and sets forth to preach a religion of brotherly hatred. Today we're going to look briefly at this book, The Autobiography of Malcolm X. There are some copies of this in the bookstore if you're interested in buying a copy of the book. It was ghostwritten by Alex Haley. That means that, in a sense, he's responsible for the way in which the book is written. Malcolm X is responsible for the content of the book. Now, Malcolm X was not particularly easy to work with, and I think that Alex Haley was probably very frustrated as a writer because of some of the things that Malcolm X insisted upon, including in the book. This could be a better book. I think it would be a better book if Malcolm X had not had as much control over it as he had. Alex Haley, the ghostwriter for the book, is a well-known black journalist. He particularly is noted for his interviews. Many of his interviews with famous people are in Playboy magazine. And Playboy magazine, as you probably know, is the highest paying magazine in the country. So he's really at the top of his profession as a journalist. And I can understand the frustration that he must have felt working with this particular book, because in many ways, this is a poor book. It is much too long, for one thing. And it's too long for a number of reasons. I think the primary reason, though, is that Malcolm X does not really know what to omit. And this weakens the book. For example, there's a point at which he's being hunted down by a criminal in Harlem. His life is being threatened. This is right before he's sent to jail. He's being pursued, and, you know, the suspense mounts. Now, in a really good book, it would just keep mounting until he was either caught or escaped. But in this book, he starts to tell you about his dinner that night that he was being chased. And, of course, it's just a complete letdown when you find out he had string beans or whatever it was he had and where he had them, you know. A second thing that weakens the book is the fact that Malcolm X is a name dropper. And he finds it necessary, I think, to include almost every famous person that he ever had any contact with in his life. And some of these people, of course, were very brief encounters, and really have nothing to do with the basic story of the man. But he wants us to know, I guess, that he met these famous people, and so there are many people mentioned in the book more than are necessary. Another weakness of the book is that it is full of unproven statements. For example, there are many statements like this one: Negroes in 1930 were physically stronger than Negroes today. You know, just pure conjecture on his part. And then I think another weakness of the book, and if you read it, you'll notice this, is that in the second part of the book, the part that takes place after his conversion, he tends to get rather preachy. And as a preacher, he's kind of a rambling preacher. So we find that the pace in the second part of the book is slow, tends to get a little tedious at times. In spite of all these things that I've said negatively about this book, this is a fascinating book. And it's fascinating because it tells about a really fascinating man. A man with a very compelling personality. A man whose life really didn't respond at all to the message of Christianity. And yet a man who was saved, at least for this life, by the Islamic religion. Particularly, it was preached by the black Muslims. I thought we would look briefly at the book by looking first at the life of Malcolm X, and secondly, at some of the teachings of the black Muslims. And then I'll probably draw some conclusions about Malcolm's philosophy at the end. Malcolm X was born Malcolm Little in May of 1925. So, you know, his life was relatively short because he was killed in 1965. His father was a Baptist minister. So again, like Baldwin and Gordon Parks, he came out of a strong Christian background. His father was also a leader in Marcus Garvey's Back to Africa movement. Remember, this was an effort to get blacks to leave the country and go back to their native land. It wasn't very successful, really. He grew up in the north, in Lansing, Michigan. It was very early in part of his life, at least. When he was 6 years old, his father was probably killed. This is, again, conjecture. It's not really determined. The father was found lying across the streetcar tracks. A streetcar had run over him. But also his head was bashed in, and so the black community in that area of Lansing, you know, sort of felt that he had been killed and been hit in the head and then laid across the tracks to be run over by the streetcar. This was really the beginning of misfortune for Malcolm's mother and his brothers and sisters and himself, because one of the insurance companies in which his father had a policy claimed that the father had committed suicide. You know, hit himself in the head and then laid down on the streetcar tracks and waited for the streetcar to come. And they didn't pay off on the policy, which meant that there was very little money for the family's immediate needs. There was one other insurance policy that took care of the funeral expenses and kept them going for a few weeks. But after that, then there was nothing. These were very proud people. The mother went to work immediately. She looked like a white woman and had no difficulty getting work. But it seemed that as soon as people found out that she was the mother of black children, they would fire her from her job. Now, whether they felt she was a white woman married to a black man and discriminated against her for that reason or not, I don't know. She actually was a black woman, but she looked white. At any rate, it got to the point where she had an extremely difficult time getting any work at all. And in spite of the fact that the older children were doing odd jobs and everything, there just was not enough money for the family, and so they had to go on welfare. And this was really the ruin of that family, because this family pride that they had in making their own way was completely demolished when that happened. And the mother began to feel very oppressed by the social workers who came. Eventually she just lost her mind. She went insane. It was a gradual process, but she first gave up hope of being able to take care of her family herself, and then gradually she just couldn't cope with reality anymore, and so eventually then the family had to split up. Now for Malcolm, this meant first of all living with other black families in the Michigan area, and then it meant going to a boys' detention home where he was very well liked by the white people who ran this home. And they sort of favored him, but he always felt that they favored him the way they would favor a pet dog or a kind of a mascot. They felt that he felt that they treated him as if he were some sort of an oddity because he was an intelligent black child. And they didn't really treat him as a fully human being. At least that's what he felt. He was successful really early in his school life, very popular and a good student, but gradually he drifted away from this. And by the time he was in his mid-teens, he was in Harlem, a dropout from school, and of course a dropout from the Christian church. He became involved in a number of hustles, a number of ways to make it in Harlem. He became a pimp, a dope pusher, a thief. And eventually, he was caught and sent to prison. It was in prison that his life really changed. Now, most people regret being sent to prison. Malcolm X never did, because it was in prison that he really found himself as a person. While he was in prison, he was contacted by Elijah Muhammad. Now, Elijah Muhammad is the leader of the black Muslims in America. Have any of you ever seen him on television or seen pictures of him? He was on one of the talk programs not too long ago. Did any of you happen to see that? He's a small, frail-looking man. And yet he has this tremendous power over people where they just seem to laugh up what he tells them. And even very intelligent people are caught up in his doctrines and take as absolute truth everything that he says. And yet when you just see him on television or something, he doesn't seem particularly impressive. But he does have this real ability, apparently, to draw people to him and to gain their full allegiance. This was certainly true of his relationship for a long time with Malcolm X, who became much more well-known than Elijah Muhammad has ever been. When Malcolm X was in prison, he was converted then to the Islamic religion. And this meant really a total change of life for him. He gave up drugs, he gave up alcohol, he gave up liquor. He even gave up his sex life for a long, long time. He had nothing to do with women. And he was motivated at the same time that he was giving these things up to acquire certain other things. For one thing, he recognized the fact that he had become very lax in his language. His vocabulary had diminished considerably to primarily four-letter words, and he realized he had to do something about his speech. His handwriting had become almost illegible because, you know, as a thief in Harlem, he just hadn't had to do anything like that. And so he began to read and to practice his handwriting. And it's kind of interesting what he did. He got a hold of a dictionary, and he decided that he was going to copy the dictionary in order to improve his penmanship. And that's precisely what he did. And as he started doing this, he was absolutely fascinated by the words that he found in the dictionary. And this kind of fascination continued with him for the rest of his life. He was always fascinated from then on by words. And he just copied and just went on. He just kept copying the dictionary and improving his handwriting in the process. He also began reading. And he read everything available practically in the prison library. And so he became a very knowledgeable, self-taught man. We perhaps might think that, you know, in some ways he seems unsophisticated, or that he seems to, you know, get overly enthusiastic about some things that he was reading and so on. He doesn't seem to have the balance, you know, that you get if you take a regular liberal arts college course. But his enthusiasm for what he was doing was just tremendous. And he read and read and read. And he used to read in his prison cell at night when he was supposed to be sleeping. The light from the corridor, from the corridor outside, was trying a little bit on the floor of his cell. So as soon as the guard had gone by his cell, he would creep out of bed and put the book in that light and read. And he would read for 58 minutes, and then he would jump into bed until the guard had gone by again. And then as soon as the guard was passed, he'd get out again. And he did that every night for several years. He would read till 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning and just sleep 3 or 4 hours. And as a result, he acquired a tremendous education. When he left prison, He did a number of things. In the first place, he changed his name to Malcolm X. Now, people who are black Muslims drop their last names because these last names are associated with slavery. Malcolm's last name had been Little, and this meant that at one time his ancestors had been owned by the Little family. And so in order to disassociate themselves from their former slave heritage, the black Muslims drop this name and take another name, or are assigned another name. And so Malcolm Little became Malcolm X. He went to work for Elijah Muhammad, and he served him faithfully for over 12 years. He later on claimed to have built the black Muslim membership in the United States from 400 up to 40,000. Whether this is true or not, I don't know. I don't know how you could go about verifying this, because they're very secretive about what the actual membership of the black Muslims is. But this is what Malcolm X claimed. By the fall of 1963, however, there had been trouble between Elijah Muhammad and Malcolm X, and I'll talk a little more about that later. And at that point, this trouble between the two of them really became public. And Malcolm X was suspended by Elijah Muhammad for a certain period as a preacher. The break was not complete yet at this point, but at least the general public became aware of the fact that there was something wrong. Elijah Muhammad is always suspending people. Not too long ago, Muhammad Ali, or Cassius Clay, was suspended. And the amazing thing is that most of the time when black Muslims are suspended, they accept this as their punishment for having gone against Elijah Muhammad's teachings and will not comment on it at all, just accept it and take this punishment. And then after the term is over, they can go back into the fold of black Muslims. Well, something happened to Malcolm X which made this break between Elijah Muhammad and himself complete. He went to Mecca in the spring of 1964, went to the holy city of the Islamic religion. And there he met people who were really true Muslims. And this is the first time he'd had that experience. And so he realized that Elijah Muhammad had been teaching a false doctrine, and his own ideas changed tremendously. When he was in Mecca, he received a new name. Malcolm X had many names throughout his lifetime. When he was a criminal, he had names like Detroit Red and a couple of other ones. Then he went from Malcolm X to his final name, which was Elhaj Malik al-Shabazz. And that was the name which he used then during the last year of his life. Finally, he was shot by followers of Elijah Muhammad. He was shot in a Sunday kind of a rally service. Unfortunately, his pregnant wife and his four small daughters were there and saw this murder. Really a terrible thing, you know, for his family to have to see this. Briefly then, that is the life of Malcolm X. And now I want to elaborate a little bit on this. Of course, there's much more in the book. Those are just some of the highlights. I want to elaborate a little bit on the code that Elijah Muhammad taught, and that Malcolm X, for the most part, accepted for most of his life as a black Muslim. In the first place, the black Muslims have a very strict moral code. And the closest thing that I can compare it to is the Puritan moral code, but I think maybe it's even stricter. They abstain from alcohol, drugs, and tobacco, and this is no small thing for many of the people who are involved in this. It's amazing that they can do this, but particularly since many of them have been, for example, narcotic addicts. And it's very difficult for a real addict to ever completely give up narcotics, but these people do. There is some separation practiced between men and women. Very clearly defined roles for men and women. Men definitely regarded as the stronger sex, and yet women are highly respected in the Black Muslim culture. Perhaps in some ways they are more respected than they are in the white American culture. At least Malcolm X felt this way. They practice sexual purity. And again, this, for many of these people who have been involved in the underworld of Harlem, this again is really a tremendous change in their lives, and yet they're able to do this. I thought you might be interested in hearing what they teach about God and man. I mentioned on Monday that white people are regarded as devils, not devilish, but actual devils. That means if a Black Muslim walks in this door and he really believes what Elijah Muhammad taught, he would view all of us as devils. And this is what Elijah Muhammad taught about the creation of the white race, how we came about, how the white devils developed. It's called Jacob's History. Elijah Muhammad teaches his followers that first the moon separated from the earth, then the first humans, original man, were a black people. They founded the holy city of Mecca. Among this black race were 24 wise scientists. One of the scientists, at odds with the rest, created the especially strong black tribe of Cabez, from which American Negroes, so-called, descend. About 6,600 years ago, when 70% of the people were satisfied and 30% were dissatisfied, among the dissatisfied was born a Mr. Jacob. He was born to create trouble, to break the peace, and to kill. His head was unusually large. When he was 4 years old, he began school. At the age of 18, Jacob had finished all his nation's colleges and universities. He was known as the big-headed scientist. Among many other things, he had learned how to breed races scientifically. This big-headed scientist, Mr. Jacob, began preaching in the streets of Mecca, making such hosts of converts that the authorities, increasingly concerned, finally exiled him with 59,999 followers to the island of Patmos. Though he was a black man, Mr. Jacob, embittered toward Allah now, decided as revenge to create upon the earth a devil race, a bleached-out white race of people. From his studies, the big-headed scientist knew that black men contained two germs, black and brown. He knew that the brown germ stayed dormant, as being the lighter of the two germs, it was the weaker. Mr. Jacob, who has set the law of nature, conceived the idea of employing what we today know as a recessive gene structure to separate each other from the two germs, black and brown, and then grafting the brown germ to progressively lighter, weaker stages. And this is then, according to this, what Mr. Jacob did. He first bred from the black race a brown race of people. That took 200 years. By that time he was dead, but he had trained followers to carry on his experiments. Then he bred, during another 200 years, a red race of people. During another 200 years, a yellow race of people. And finally, the last 200 years, the white devils were bred. 200 years later, the white race had at last been created. On the island of Patmos was nothing but these blonde, pale-skinned, cold, blue-eyed devils, savages, nude and shameless, hairy like animals. They walked on all fours and they lived in trees. 600 more years passed before this race of people returned to the mainland among the natural black people. Mr. Elijah Muhammad teaches his followers that within 6 months' time, through telling lies that set the black men fighting among each other, this devil race had turned what had been a peaceful heaven on earth into a hell, torn by quarreling and fighting. But finally, the original black people recognized that their sudden trouble stemmed from this devil white race that Mr. Yacob had made. They rounded them up, put them in chains. With little aprons to cover their nakedness, this devil race was marched off across the Arabian Desert to the caves of Europe. The lambskin and the cable The white devil race in Europe's caves was savage. The animals tried to kill him. He climbed trees outside his cave, made clubs, trying to protect his family from the wild beasts outside trying to get in. When this devil race had spent 2,000 years in the cave, Allah raised up Moses to civilize them and bring them out of the cave. It was written that this devil white race would rule the world for 6,000 years. The books of Moses are missing. That's why it is not known that he was in the cave. When Moses arrived, the first of these devils to accept his teachings, the first he let out, were those we call today the Jews. According to the teachings of this Yaakov's history, when the Bible says Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, that serpent is symbolic of the devil white race Moses lifted up out of the caves of Europe, teaching them civilization. It was written that after Yaakov's bleached white race had ruled the world for 6,000 years, down to our time, the black original race would give birth to one whose wisdom, knowledge, and power would be infinite. It was written that some of the original black people should be brought as slaves to North America to learn to better understand at first hand the white devil's and perhaps make some suggestions about books that you might find helpful in this area so that you might better understand.